indulge me for a second, take a moment and think about your dad. What's he look like? What kind of memories does he feature in? And where's he absent? How does he compare to the stereotypical Aussie dad, whatever that looks like to you? Because Australian fathering is as diverse as the dads that span the country, and it's changed hugely over the past few generations. Now a group of researchers have set out to document the history of dadding across the past century. So, of course, I want to hear from dads today about how you dad. Did you look up to your father as a role model to emulate when you had kids, or are you doing things differently? Alistair Thompson is a historian at Monash University and one of the authors of Fathering an Australian History. He is also a proud dad, stepdad, and granddad. Alistair, firstly, who are you a dad to?
Thanks, Tegan, and thanks for having me on Life Matters. I've got a daughter, Lily, who's training to be a nurse at the moment and has got two kids of her own, and a son who's a psych nurse in Melbourne.
Talk to me about the title of this book here. Why did you choose the word fathering and not fatherhood?
Yeah, it's a good question, Tegan. Fatherhood is an institution. It's the institution of fatherhood. It's the expectations about what fathers should be and do. Fathering is what we actually do as dads. It's the act of fathering. It's how we look after our kids, what support we provide, and so on and so forth. And we thought the fathering for this book was a more important term because it's a book based upon fathers' life stories from letters, from diaries, from memoirs, and especially from oral history interviews conducted across the 20th century with Australian dads, but also with kids talking about their dads. And these are stories where people talk about how dads dadded, or whatever the word is, and how that shifted or didn't shift across the 20th century.
Dad is a verb. So tell me about what you saw shifting over that time.
Look, Australia's interesting. I mean, across the Western world, fathers across the 20th century have been primarily expected to be the breadwinner of the family. In Australia, Australia's quite distinctive because we institutionalised that with the basic wage in the early 20th century, which was basically set on the premise that a man's wage should be set so that they could keep a wife and three kids in reasonably frugal comfort. That was the quote. And that was the expectation. So wage settings were set so that men's wage was a family wage and women were paid much, much less, which meant that basically the expectation was that women would raise children. And so it structured in fathers as breadwinners and mothers as mothers and not as workers, although as we know, many women did work, and that shifts across the 20th century. So while men continue to be primary breadwinners across the 20th century, you get some really significant shifts in the second half of the century as married women increasingly work, as the economy requires two incomes in every family, but also as expectations about what men should do in families shift with second wave feminism in particular, beginning to argue that women should be out there working as well as raising kids, but also men should be more at home, playing a more active and engaged role in family life. And there's a tension between the expectation that you see in Bluey, for example, with Bluey's dad, Bandit, who's this extraordinary father, active, engaged, playful, spending a lot of time with his kids. But Bluey doesn't work. Well, he does work. He's got a job. He's an archaeologist. He digs up bones. but you don't see Bluey, Bandit rather, going off to work very often in that show. And that's the key tension for the 21st century dad. On the one hand, they're expected to be active and engaged fathers. On the other hand, the wage system and the welfare system, the nature of parental leave, all means that it's much more likely that mothers will be doing most of the raising children and that fathers will often become what we sometimes describe as secondary dads, playing a part-time role, weekends, after schools, whatever, but not really taking the major load of family life.
I'm nodding so furiously, Alistair. It feels like you're really describing the tension in so many families like my own and my peers and everything. The thing that really stood out to me in the book, though, is that there is this sense of a traditional early 20th century fatherhood trope, but there's always been men that broke the mold.
That's right. One of the lovely things about working with life stories is you realise that, yes, there are structural and systematic factors that shape what people do, what men and women do in families, and there are cultural expectations that change across time and also influence what we do. But actually, when it comes down to it, every family has to make its own decisions, and every father has to take responsibility for what they do. And there's some wonderful case studies. The one that really comes to mind to me is such an unexpected story. So Herman Mandel was a the father of four small boys when his wife dies in the early 20th century. He's a painter and decorator. He's a working class man. There's no welfare support for a single dad in those days. He's got no choice but to continue working. And what usually happened for much of the 20th century was that men like that, widowed or separated, would either get married quickly so they had someone to raise the kids, they would farm the kids out to family members, or what often happened, the kids would end up in institutions. But Herman Mandel is extraordinary. He moves across town in Sydney to live in a street where Auntie Beryl is able to look after the infant son who's not yet at school. The other three boys are at school, and Herman learns to cook. He learns to look after the house. The boys learn to cook and help each other. And Herman is an extraordinary dad. He works hard, but he also, and there's a lovely story about the sons remembering how dad learned to make puddings, not just cook main meals, but puddings as well. And what's really interesting that Arthur, the youngest of the three boys who is at home with their dad, has this active dad who's engaged, who's got a working life, but also is fully engaged with raising his sons. And then when Arthur becomes a father in the 1930s and 1940s, he's really quite exceptional as a man of that generation. He's married, he's the primary breadwinner, but unlike many men of that generation, in an interview in the early 1980s, he remembered above all being a dad, and he remembered taking a really key role in changing nappies and bathing the kids and reading to his daughters. And my sense is that because that's what he'd grown up with, an active and engaged father, that was something that came to him naturally and which he did against the odds. And so that was pretty uncommon in the 1930s and 40s. But it's an example of, if you have a role model of a father who's actively engaged in family life, then you're more likely perhaps to become that father when you become a dad.
That is so beautiful. And it makes me think about, you sort of hear one of two things with parents, not just dads, where you either go, the way I was raised was wonderful and I want to give my children that, or the way I was raised was terrible and I'm going to do the opposite.
Absolutely right. I mean, the book is full because they're life stories and people are remembering their fathers and they're often thinking about how their father fathered and therefore as they become a dad, how they should do it. And that ranges from everything from domestic and family violence. And no, this is a story with a book with lots of wonderful stories, but it's also got a dark history because family violence is there right across the 20th century. It tends to get neglected or pushed under the carpet until late in the 20th century when it becomes both a personal and a political issue. But you've got, you know, men whose fathers were violent, dealing with, well, how do I break that pattern? And wonderful examples of men who do make conscious decisions not to be like their dads. You've also got, I mean, there's a really interesting thing. For example, in the 1930s, a lot of fathers are out of work, family life is tough, and the kids who grow up in the 30s who become parents, become fathers or mothers in the 1950s and 60s are determined to have family security in a way that they didn't have when they were growing up. And so there's a generation of young men who become fathers after World War II who are determined to be successful breadwinners and work really hard. And their kids who are growing up in the sort of 50s, 60s and 70s, on the one hand, have a lot of respect for their fathers, for the family security that they grew up in, but also they remember absent dads. They remember dads who are away long hours at work, often working on weekends, getting home after they're asleep and so on. And so when these men become dads in the 80s and 90s, they want to be different to their fathers. They want to be more active and engaged fathers. And at the same time, you've got second wave feminism giving them a model that, if you like, legitimizes that. But at the same time, the nature of work and of men's and women's pay mean that on the whole, many of those men are frustrated and unable to live out what they want to do, which is to be a different type of father.
You are listening to Life Matters here on Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Alistair Thompson, who's an emeritus professor in history at Monash University and one of the authors of a new book called Fathering an Australian History, just regaling us with stories of how dadding has changed over the last century. I've asked you how you dad, and maybe whether you've done things intentionally similarly or intentionally differently to the way you were raised by your own dad. Chris says, I just loved, cared for, engaged with, cleaned up and grew with my children while doing my best to work together with mum. I didn't see this through a gendered lens. And Chris says, thanks, Alistair. So history is, you know, by definition, looking back. But what do you see about the cultural fathering moment we're in right now, Alistair?
Yeah. Look, on the one hand, it's the moment of Bandit, Bluey's dad, where dads can do everything. They're engaged, they've got a job, they raise their kids, they play with them. But at the same time, we know, for example, during COVID, and the afterword of the book looks at Bluey and COVID as two moments in sort of early 21st century family life and fathering. And we thought during COVID, when fathers as well as mothers were working at home, we thought that the load would shift and that it would be more equal and that fathers would play a more active and engaged role. And there's a lot of optimism in the early years of lockdowns in Melbourne, for example, that family dynamics and roles would shift significantly because of COVID. And we know now that that didn't happen, that even though fathers and mums were both working at home, fathers' work tended to be regarded as more important, more easier to shut off from family life and so on. And women continued, mothers continued to play the primary role and the emotional role, the thinking role about what are we going to do with the kids today and so on. So that's really tough. And I think one of the key things is what happens in those first few years. If we've learned one thing from this book, is that if a father takes a primary caring role for their kids in the first few years, then they'll continue to play an active and engaged role and won't become secondary dads. They'll be primary equal parents. But the wage system, the paid parental leave system, the fact that women take up paid parental leave much more than men, and that basically a lot of men, I mean, look in my own family, the fathers of my children's generation often can't afford to take more than a very small amount of paid parental leave because they just literally can't afford it. Until and unless you have a scheme a bit like, for example, in Scandinavia, where, you know, each parent can get 6 months of paid parental leave. If you don't take it as a father, you lose it as a family. And it's paid at your normal pay rate, so there's no disincentive, then you see a lot of dads pushing prams in Copenhagen and Stockholm and so on. And that is a really transformative change.
Thanks for joining me today, Alistair. Alistair Thompson is a historian at Monash University, one of the authors of Fathering an Australian History.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.